Everybody together, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. James 4:7. And New Testament. Should we just say this together? All scripture is inspired by God and is useful to teach us what is true and to make us realize what is wrong in our lives. 2 Timothy 3:16. And this is August 1st, and we're nearly out of August, so we really ought to know this one. So should we just say it together? Don't just listen to God's word. You must do what it says. Otherwise, you are only fooling yourselves. James 1, verse 20. Wonderful. So next week, it'll be September, and we'll have a new verse. If you have a favourite verse you want to suggest, then let us know, and we'll see what we can do. Right then, so our first hymn is number 366, Jesus is King. It's a lovely statement, that, isn't it? Jesus is King, and I will extol him, give him the glory and honour his name. Okay, so now we've got some pictures hopefully coming up, which are by trying to depict various attitudes. Okay, so we've got a nice, easy one here. What kind of attitude do you think this guy's got? He's angry, isn't he? He's so angry. He's going to explode in a moment if he's not careful. Ooh, what about this one? What about this one? What do you think?
Sassy.
Sassy, yeah? She's about...
I
confess
to that one.
Okay, if you... what about this one? He's a bit different. Abused, yeah? Sad, yeah? Did you say something? Anxious? Yeah, anybody ever had any of these sort of attitudes? Quite common, aren't they, really? Yeah, next one. Ooh. He's embarrassed. He's just been caught out for something. Oh, no. What's that going to do? I'm so embarrassed. What about this? Stroppy, lots of stroppiness. No need to point. It's just
confused.com.
Hmm. Oh, what about this one? Is he not really paying attention, is he? Kind of wants to be somewhere else, perhaps. You know. Ooh, crumbs. I'm shocked. Shocked and surprised. She's happy. Happy, joyful. Another one. Oh, that's all we got. Well, loads of attitudes that we can come to chapel with, but I want to just read you Philippians chapter 2, verse 5 and 6 and 7. And it says, the attitude you should have should be the same as Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not demand and cling to his rights as God. He made himself nothing. He took the humble position of a slave and appeared in human form. And in human form, he obediently humbled himself even further by dying a criminal's death on the cross. And so we do feel lots of attitudes and things, but the attitude we're striving for is the one that Jesus Christ had, who humbled himself. So let's try and keep that in our minds and hearts, shall we? To be like Jesus. There was that phrase, what would Jesus do in various situations? And we can be asking ourselves, what would Jesus' attitude be as we go through our lives? Okay, so I want us to turn to Matthew 5 now in the Bibles, which is given the Sermon on the Mount, we call the Sermon on the Mount. It was probably a little hill, not a mountain. I just want to read a few, just read what we call the Beatitudes there. Beatitudes is a kind of funny word, really. I tried to understand what it meant, and if you know me about words, that's going to be a bit of a struggle. But it seemed about what attitude are we trying to be with these Beatitudes? You know, what attitude of being are we struggling for? And so I don't know if that's helpful to say that or not, but it was to me. So let's read Matthew chapter 5, verse 1, and it says, "One day, as the crowds were gathering, Jesus went up the mountainside with his disciples and sat down to teach them. This is what he taught them. God blesses those who realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is given to them. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God blesses those who are gentle and lowly, for the whole earth will belong to them. God blesses those who are hungry and thirsty for justice, for they will receive it in full. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God. God blesses those who are persecuted because they live for God, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses you when you are mocked and persecuted and lied about because you are my followers. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were persecuted too." We're not going to make it all the way through that little list. We're only going to probably go halfway. So don't worry if you're watching the time. But just thinking about that first beatitude there, verse 3, God blesses those who realize their need for him. God blesses those who realize their need for him. And I ask myself, you know, why are we here? What attitude brought us here? Why did we decide to come? And so I ask myself that question, and I seem to come back with the answer that, well, first of all, Barry's asked me to speak, so I really ought to be here. And well, then the next reason I'm here is I'm a church leader here as well, so that's another good reason. And it's actually my kind of habit or tradition to come to Loham Chapel. And when I thought about it, I've probably done that for 40 years. No wonder I've got grey hair and, you know, falling apart. But, you know, I also want to be here to meet with other Christians, to worship God, and to be encouraged in my faith, because I need that. I would struggle on my own. And as I do that, as I am encouraged, I want to encourage others in their faith as well. So if that can be of mutual benefit. And on my own, I'm not really a very strong Christian, and I need others to give me a kick up the behind, basically, sometimes, and to hold on in there. And actually, the singing is better when there's lots of us singing rather than me on my own, as you found out a few weeks back. But that was kind of my need for each other, really, and not really talking about my need for Jesus. Do I recognise my need for Jesus? Or is it just other people that I'm wanting to come to chapel for? Well, hopefully we can concentrate on God while we're here. You know, there are many distractions, and we can think about it, and we can be annoyed because we've got to wear a mask. We can be all sorts of places in our heads instead of thinking about God. But you know what? I was going to turn us to James 4:7. And what does James 4:7 say? That's right. And it says, submit to God. Well, we're here. Let's submit to God. Resist the devil. Resist those stuff which comes into your head, maybe that makes you angry, or maybe which makes you sad. And that will sort that out. But it goes on in verse 8 and says, draw close to God, and God will draw close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you hypocrites. Let there be tears for the wrong things that you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. When you bow down before the Lord, admit your dependence on him, and he will lift you up and give you honour. And so when we come to chapel to bow down before the Lord, admit your dependence on him, James is saying. Admit our dependence on God. We can't do it on our own. You know that it's impossible for us to climb up to heaven to be with God. And And that's basically what religion is all about, isn't it? If we do this ritual, that will bring us closer to God. If we do this thing, then God will be pleased with us and we will be closer to him. We will be nearer him in heaven. And we if we can do all the good ones, then we get even closer. And if we're really good, we get there. But that's not what God wants out of us. It's impossible for us to climb up to heaven. We're not going to be that good. And so what happened instead? God came down to earth in the form of Jesus in order to live, to face life that we know about, to face life so that he knows what life is like for us. We can identify with him and he with us. But he didn't only live life, he also died to take our punishment for our sin when he died on the cross. And so we can't make it up to heaven, but Jesus came down to earth. And we need to acknowledge our need for him. And the reward comes in the form of the kingdom of heaven. And I think in this context, we can easily just say that that means we become a Christian. We are one with God. And in that process, we become blessed. We are one, well and truly blessed. And so there's that old song, you know, Frank Sinatra, I think it is. And he says, "I did it my way. I did it my way." And, you know, lots of people have that at their funeral. And I don't know if they choose it or somebody else chooses it for them. But my way is generally not God's way. And, you know, you can have a bit of a laugh. Oh, yeah, they were awkward so-and-so and that sort of thing. But we need to do life God's way. We need to acknowledge our need of him. He doesn't need us, but we need him. And so for people who are self-made men and women, you know, achieve great things, it's quite a dangerous position. If you've got lots of wealth, you've got lots of position, lots of power, you can do what you like, go where you like, because it's all there for you if you've got enough money. That can be quite a dangerous position because it's all about ourselves and what we've done. And we don't realize our dependence upon God. But we need God. And so that is our first beatitude. Let me just try and read that once more. God blesses those who realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is given to them. Okay, so if we look at verse 4 in Matthew chapter 5, we will read something like this. It says, "God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Now, mourning is a word associated with death. It's what people mourn, somebody who's just died. And that is perfectly right and proper. But I think the word can probably be used in a more broader sense than that as well. And so I think that's generally the sense of it here. And, you know, we are designed to mourn, to cry, to feel sadness. But we are also designed to feel joy and happiness. And, you know, they're kind of two ends of the spectrum. And some people kind of go along, bump along in the middle there somehow. And others up there and down there and all over the place. And so it's not to say one's right and the other's wrong. It's just to say that that is how life happens. But, you know, King David, we remember he sinned badly, didn't he, with Bathsheba. He committed adultery and went on to commit murder. But Psalm 51 tells us how he mourned for that sin which he had committed. He was really sad. And he said in verse 16 of that psalm, he's talking to God, he says, "You will not be pleased with sacrifices, or I would bring them. If I brought you a burnt offering, you would not accept it. The sacrifice you want is a broken spirit, a broken and repentant heart, O God, you will not despise." And so it seems that we're back with sort of rituals and sacrifices and offerings and things. And David is living in Old Testament time, so he's obviously commanded through the law of Moses to do these offerings and sacrifices. But those offerings and sacrifices should be done because, first of all, your heart is broken and really sorry about your sin, and you're really wanting to meet with God and to appease, a sort of say sorry. You're wanting to say sorry to God. And offerings, you're wanting to say thank you to God because it's coming from your heart in the first place. Your repentant, broken heart. You're saying, I'm not good enough for God, and therefore God has given me this offering I can make in the Old Testament times. And so we see a picture there of genuine confession and a need to turn away from our sin. And when that happens, God offers us comfort. You know, we don't like being sad, we don't like mourning, we don't like pain, but Jesus says that if we come to him in our weakness, he will comfort us. And that is indeed comforting. But you know, how good are we at actually feeling other people's pain and sorrow? It's easy to feel our own, you know, that comes naturally. But can we put our arm around somebody else and feel their pain and sorrow and mourn with them? And if we do that, we will find that we will likely to have their joy as well when that comes along. And so there is a large benefit there. But we need to be careful not to be stuck in our mourning and sorrow, because as we encounter that, we can know God's comfort too in that situation. And it's obviously we need to mourn, we need to be sorrowful, but we need also to know God's comfort so that we can move on and not stay in that place. Jesus, when he started preaching in Israel, he quoted Isaiah chapter 61, which goes like this: "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, because the Lord has appointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted, and to announce that captives will be released and prisoners will be freed. He has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favour has come, and with it the day of God's anger against their enemies. To all who mourn in Israel, he will give beauty for ashes, joy instead of mourning, praise instead of despair. For the Lord has planted them like a strong and graceful oak for his own glory." And so Jesus was saying he has come for those who mourn, for those who mourn their own sorrows, for those who know they need Jesus. He has come for them, and he is going to bring them comfort. He is going to change their mourning into joy and praise instead of despair. He's going to make you like a strong, graceful oak. And you see a strong, graceful tree in that storm the other day that we had. And, you know, it stood firm, even when it was buffeted with those strong winds. A good picture there. You see, the world is just trying to find happiness at any cost. But we need to mourn our hopelessness, to know our need of Jesus, and to cling on to Jesus' righteousness. And then Jesus will give us comfort and hope. So let's go back to Matthew 5 once more. And the next verse, which is verse 5, Matthew 5, 5. "God blesses those who are gentle and lowly, for the whole earth will belong to them." This statement actually comes from Psalm 37, which was written by King David. And I was slightly surprised, and it's pretty much a direct quote from Psalm 37, verse 11. And I shouldn't have been surprised by this, should I? But I was surprised. You know, it was only the other week that we saw that David, King David, was living out New Testament principles in his life. Those principles of loving your enemies, not taking revenge, don't repay evil for evil. He was doing that when King Saul was chasing him, wasn't he? He could have finished King Saul off there and then, but he chose not to. And so it did not to be surprise us that he says in verse 11 of Psalm 37, "Those who are gentle and lowly will possess the land. They will live in prosperous security." And if we look at the beginning of that psalm, it's a wonderful psalm. It says, verse 1, don't worry about the wicked. Don't envy those who do wrong. For like grass, they will soon fade away. Like springtime flowers that soon wither. Trust in the Lord and do good, and then you will live safely in the land and prosper. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you your heart's desires. And so David is capturing this thing about being gentle and lowly. And gentle and lowly people, we don't hear about them much, do we? You know, they don't make the news headlines because they are gentle and lowly. And the news headlines are a bit boring if you have gentle and lowly people there, because their lives don't seem to be exciting like those who are concerned with power and prestige in this world. And we can all think of dodgy leaders around the world who are interested in just their power and prestige, and they want to make laws to stop people doing good things. But you know, Psalm 37 says, don't worry about the wicked. Don't envy those who do wrong. And we haven't got to think necessarily about world leaders in that context. We can think about our neighbours, our friends, or anybody else. Don't worry about those who are wicked. Don't envy those who do wrong, because they will soon fade away. And you know, when I was a lot younger, in sort of 1990s type time, there was communist countries across Eastern Europe, and they were doing lots of those regimes were doing lots of bad things with Christians, and no doubt other people too. They would put them in prison and all that stuff, and it just seemed an impossibly difficult situation. But all of a sudden, those communist regimes were gone. They've collapsed from the inside. Hardly any shots were fired. And it collapsed, you know. Suddenly the wicked are gone. And we need to be ready to put good stuff in the place of bad. And there was the thing which Jesus, the parable that Jesus told about when the demon spirits were sent out of a person, that you needed the God's Holy Spirit to be in straight away, or the evil spirit can come back in that vacant space. And so we need to read on, really, through Psalm 37. We're not going to do it now, but if we do that, we will find out about how it's good to be gentle and lowly, because we can know God and we can live according to his ways instead of the ways of the wicked. And we can remember that Matthew 16, there's a quote there. Let me just turn it up so I get that right. Matthew 16, verse 26. You're sure you'll know this. And and how do you benefit if you gain the whole wide world but lose your own soul in the process? You know, some people are just desperate to own the whole world, or maybe their whole road of houses, or their whole something else. How does it benefit us if we gain those things we dream of, but that we lose our soul in the process? It's worth thinking about, isn't it? There are advantages of being gentle and lowly instead of just desperate to be proud and powerful. And Jesus says to us in Matthew 11, he says, come unto me, all you that are weary and burdened. How does that good verse go? You know that one, don't you? Come to me. Hang on, let's start again. Jesus said, yes, Jesus said, come to me, all you are weary and burdened, because I will give you rest. And he goes on to say, because I am gentle and lowly. And so, that, if nothing else, is a really good reason to be gentle and lowly, because Jesus is gentle and lowly. That's Matthew 11, verse 30. So let's go to Jesus. Let's find rest. And let's stay with him who has all power and all authority over heaven and earth. Let's not worry about the wicked. Let's go to Jesus, who is gentle and lowly, and become like him. There was another guy in the Old Testament called Naaman, and he was a Syrian captain. And he was fortunate that he had a little slave girl who was an Israelite, and she knew about the prophet Elijah. And unfortunately for Naaman, he had leprosy, and so his life was going to be not good and severely shortened. But this little girl got a message to him and saying, oh, if only he could see the prophet Elijah, because Elijah would be able to heal him and then he would be okay. Now, Naaman, being a captain of the Syrian army, was quite a big, proud, powerful man. And so he thought, well, that sounds a good idea. I'll gather a load of my wealth together and loads of gifts and presents for this Elijah guy, and we'll go and see him. And so you can imagine him turning up in his chariot and all his entourage. And he comes there, and somebody bangs on Elisha's door, and Naaman is there waiting to be greeted by this great prophet Elisha. But all Elisha does is to send out his little servant who has a message. And the message is, just go and dip in the River Jordan 7 times and you'll be made better. You'll be healed. But Naaman, he's proud, and he's an important man. And he thinks, what? That muddy old river? You know, if I had to get in a river, I would get into a clean one with crystal flowing water and sparkly whatever and sand on the edge. I don't want to go in Jordan dirty water. And he was quite upset about this. He said, no way. Because he wasn't being gentle and lowly. He was being proud and rather arrogant. And when he calmed down a bit, his servant said to him, do you know what? If somebody had said to you to do a big thing for God, for your healing, he said, you would have done it. You would have attempted to have climbed a mountain on your knees. You would have attempted to do all sorts of things. But because it was such a humble thing and a seemingly nonsense thing to do, you won't do it. And so Naaman very wisely relented. And he went and he dipped himself in the dirty water of the River Jordan 7 times. And he came out clean and healed of leprosy. You see, he saw the benefit of being gentle and lowly instead of proud and powerful. Okay, so that's all I want to say about that. But now we're going to be treated with a song from Juliet with the words on the screen to help us to follow. So see if you can see a connection between any of what I've been saying and this song as we go through. I don't really know the song myself, but it's a good one I know.
Who taught the sun where to stand in the morning? And who told the ocean you can only come this far? And who showed the moon where to hide till evening? Whose words alone can catch a falling star? Same God that spins things in orbit. He runs to the weary, the worn and the weak. And the same gentle hands that hold me when I'm broken, they conquer death to bring me victory. My Redeemer.
which is verse 6. God blesses those who are hungry and thirsty for justice, for they will receive it in full. Now, your versions and your memory may be saying that should say righteousness instead of justice. And in many Bibles, it does say righteousness. So I'm sorry if I'm not going to talk about righteousness. I'm going to talk about justice. And please don't feel upset about that. And there are similarities, of course, but there are also quite sort of differences. But are we hungry and thirsty for righteousness? And Jesus says, for they will receive it. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 4 and 5 is quite clear on this. It's talking about Jesus coming. He will defend the poor and the exploited. He will judge against the wicked and destroy them with the breath of his mouth. He will be clothed with fairness and truth. So Jesus is indeed concerned with justice and righteousness. And it's very popular these days, isn't it? You read in Christian magazines all over the place about the theme of justice. And there was a need for it in the Old Testament times, and there's a need for it today. But I've just read a book about a guy called Ray Hinton. He was a poor black person in America, a little couple years older than me. And he spent 30 years on death row as an innocent man. He maintained his innocence all the time, but the legal system kept him there. And when he eventually got released, he was meant to have a retrial. But the situation was such that it was a complete waste of time. All the evidence was pointing in the other way, so they didn't even have a trial. And yet the legal system kept him there for 30 years, and when it was so obvious that he shouldn't be there. But even in that terrible place on death row, he found that he could choose joy or despair. He could choose love or hate, forgiveness or anger. And he believed in the justice system there, and he believed that would exonerate him, but it didn't. It put him in there, and he was so angry about that. For 3 years, he did not speak. And then all of a sudden, he tried to comfort the guy who was next in the next prison cell to him. He could hear him crying or whatever, and he just reached out to this guy as best he could from inside his own cell. And from that moment, he realized he had the choice of he could choose to be angry, or he could choose forgiveness. He could choose to hope, or he could choose despair. And amazingly, he chose the positive in life, and he chose to try and reach out to the guys across the corridor and in the next door cells to see if he could just help them in any way possible, which he did. And he even reached out to the prison guards and put a smile on their face as well, because it's a fairly desperate place, it would seem. And so he's out of prison now, and he's obviously campaigning, telling his story. And sadly, it's unlikely that he's going to stop the corruption and injustice which he has suffered. But that passage in Isaiah was saying that Jesus will, when Jesus comes again in power at the end of time. But, you know, are we just interested in our needs, or are we interested in other people's needs? And that was what this guy found out, that he was a lovely guy. His mother taught him to love people, and he wanted to follow that route, even in that despair of the death row. And that's the same for us. We can bring hope to people who are around us. Hope for people who are suffering injustice, perhaps. Hope for people who just need a helping hand in some way or another. He was locked up in that cell, but he could encourage other people next to him in that cell. And thinking of people in prison, I was reading this Sat7 magazine. Sat7 is a Christian TV channel in the Middle East, which is run by Middle Eastern people. We've come to see a little bit of it in recent years. And so there's this man, he's been put into prison in Iran because of his faith. And inside there, he meets other Christians as well, and there's other people of conscience, prisoners of conscience, and Muslims, and Baha'is, and atheists, and But anyway, he finds a way to worship God in prison, you know, in a desperate place. And he says one of these ways was toilet duty, was another fellowship opportunity. On one occasion, all four people who went to clean the toilets were Christians. For 40 minutes, we sang worship songs, prayed and interceded. This was not a hygienic place, but we cleaned joyfully. And I discovered something that was new to me, which I describe as lovable pain. Even while we are experiencing suffering, we can experience joy. And it's an incredible witness of this guy in prison. And I think he was inside for about 5 years. And when he was let out, he had what they describe here as the UK clap for the NHS, for the key workers. And as he was led out of the prison, the other prisoners clapped and sang songs. They joined him in his joy, and he went out to that prison with that ringing in his ears. And so, even in the direst of circumstances, we can choose joy and we can worship God. It's an incredible story. And so we do see injustice around us, but we can choose we can choose for justice, and we can follow that and help where we can.